court, and that is whether the Delaware no-fault statute requires State Farm to reserve personal injury protection or PIP benefits for future lost earnings upon an insured's request. State Farm respectfully submits that the answer to that question is no. As set forth in our briefs, the Superior Court's contrary conclusion is wrong for three basic reasons. First, the right recognized by the Superior Court has no basis in the language of the no-fault statute. Second, the right recognized by the Superior Court is inconsistent with the no-fault statute's payment requirements. And third, the first-in, first-out, or FIFO procedure followed by State Farm in this case is entirely consistent with the requirements and purpose of the no-fault statute. The parties dispute various facts, including whether State Farm was entitled to rely on the assignment of benefits presented to us, to it by, I think it's Christiana Care Services, which provided emergency medical services to the insured, to the plaintiff. But unless the court has questions about that issue, I'll rely on our briefs with respect to it. Let me focus on the reservation of right issue that's principally raised. It's undisputed that State Farm paid the policy maximum of $15,000 in PIP benefits, the only coverage at issue in this case. PIP coverage is the only coverage at issue, for medical care provided to the plaintiff following his September 2009 automobile accident. And plaintiff's position, which he obviously hopes to take back following remand and certify a class with, is that an insured is entitled to direct the payment of any PIP benefits, including reserving them to pay future lost earnings regardless of any assignment. So let me address why that ruling should be reversed.
Right. And before you get there, since you want to put the medical payments aside, we need to understand how your rule would work out if we adopt your position in this appeal. Let's assume that there had not been an assignment and that the medical bills had not been paid completely. Rather, $5,000 of medical bills had come in, and then the insured said, well, I want to reserve my right to get my lost wages, and therefore don't pay any more medical bills because I want my lost wages to come first. Your position is, if there's any, that the bills should be paid as they come in, and if a bill's paid, and there's one bill for lost wages that's paid, but there's a possibility of future lost wages that have not yet been incurred, and that the insured can't say, please don't pay any more medical bills that have already been incurred, but rather keep the money for possible lost future wages.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. Yeah, if the medical costs are submitted pursuant to a valid assignment, there's no question about the assignment. The health care provider is clearly entitled, they've been incurred, and the health care provider is clearly entitled to payment, then as we read the Delaware statute, we have to pay that claim within 30 days.
Right.
And we cannot, where there's one place in the Delaware statute that allows reservation for future medical expenses and lost earnings, but that doesn't apply here. And so, yes, that's
I understand. I just wanted to be clear that your point, here, if the assignment was valid, all the money was paid out. But my question really was, if you paid part of the medical bills, but there was still insurance coverage to be paid out, your position is you can't put a hold on it for lost wages.
That's correct.
Okay. I have a question that's related to our typical reluctance to give advisory opinions. Is it a fact in this case that the entire $15,000 in PIP was paid toward medical bills before there was a request that the money be reserved for the purpose of lost wages?
That's certainly our position, Judge.
Is it factually in dispute or not?
I don't believe so, but I don't want to speak for the plaintiff. But our view of the facts is on January 6, 2011, we paid out $15,000. That was the same day that plaintiffs claimed they first made a request for a PIP application, not a reservation of rights, but a PIP application.
Does our ruling go our prospective ruling then go beyond those facts?
Not beyond, well, is the question whether or not if the assignment's valid, do you have to take up this issue?
The question is, do the parties, both sides, expect a ruling that goes beyond those facts in the sense that all of the PIP in other cases may not have been paid out by the time the request to reserve the balance for exclusively for lost wages would be received? There's an expectation we rule on facts not in evidence in this case?
Your Honor, I don't believe that's State Farm's expectation. Our expectation is that we have been told that even if, in this case, the assignment's invalid, but if we win on that issue before this court, and that issue is remanded for further consideration, we will still have the issue that the Superior Court has told us, State Farm, that if the insured tells you not to pay medical care expenses and reserve those PIP benefits for lost wages, then you have to reserve them regardless of whether or not they've been incurred yet, and even though the medical expenses have been incurred. So I don't think that goes beyond the facts of the case,
well,
that ruling.
Is this a case where the plaintiff claims that despite the fact that you paid out PIP in full before the reservation came to your attention or before they requested that you reserve the PIP for lost wages, that you would have to pay beyond the PIP coverage that was available because you paid it all out to the medical providers?
Yeah, and again, it's my understanding of the plaintiff's position is they're here because they think the plaintiff believes he's still entitled to $15,000 even though we've paid it out to medical providers.
Okay.
Can I ask what may be an irrelevant question here? Would it be fair to say that if the pay as it comes in rule prevails, that almost in all cases medical benefits will use up the PIP coverage largely to the exclusion of paying lost wages?
Your Honor, that there's certainly going to be other cases where that happens. I don't have that information before me. There are cases, though, where the injuries are not as severe and you don't have $15,000 in medical expenses. You may have some associated lost earnings that would still be payable.
You couched the issue when you began your opening in terms of whether the no-fault statute requires your client, State Farm, to reserve all or a portion of the PIP when so requested by the insured. Would you agree that the statute doesn't explicitly read on that issue one way or the other?
Not directly, but if you look at it in context, I think the fact that there is such a right created for other situations speaks to the fact that the legislature...
It doesn't directly address this issue.
That's true.
And would you also agree that the statute doesn't give Mr. Davis, you know, the right to instruct you, by the same token, it doesn't, you know, explicitly give your side the right to decide how to allocate those PIP proceeds?
That's true, Your Honor.
Okay. So what we have is, at least at the beginning, a dispute as to how those proceeds should be allocated, with the insured saying they should be allocated to lost earnings, and with and State Farm, in this case at least, saying no, they should go to the medical providers, correct?
That is correct.
So isn't the issue for us is who decides?
Well, that certainly is the issue.
That's okay. And if the statute doesn't read on that one way or the other, what is the source of law that we draw upon in order to reach a reasoned conclusion?
Yeah, and Your Honor, I may have misunderstood your earlier question. The statute does speak to that issue. Section 2118A talks to the fact that payment benefits are paid when incurred.
About payment. Yeah, you know, it also says that there's a time, you know, that there is a window of time. And conceivably, let's not talk about this case, but in some other case, that there may be an incurred expense, but it doesn't have to be, you know, the expense doesn't have to be paid for X number of days. So we can come up, we can conjure a hypothetical where this issue is actually posed. And in that case, wouldn't it be true that the statute doesn't really provide any guidance?
If I'm understanding the hypothetical correctly, if the expense has been incurred, then that's what the statute requires, and then it's a matter of submitting the documentation to support the expense. But I'm not certain I'm following the hypothetical.
Well, does the policy address this in any way?
The policy does not. It basically tracks the statute.
And your competitors that do allow a reservation of future lost wages, according to the briefs, do their policies address it, or is it just market forces at work? We want to keep our insureds happy.
Yeah, I don't know what their policies say, Your Honor. Those letters and affidavits came in after summary judgment argument. We didn't have any discovery as to those. I don't know what the facts and circumstances are. There are certainly, they could be very different. There could be multiple coverages. There could be a host of reasons. If it's true that those other insurers reserve for lost wages, there could be a host of reasons not presented here why they might do that.
Okay. If the policy doesn't address it and the statute doesn't directly address it, should the policy be interpreted in a way that favors the insured?
Well, Your Honor, if it was truly ambiguous, I think that's what the construction rules would require. It'd be construed against the drafter. But I don't, you know, again, I'm just recognizing that it's not within the question posed. I do think the statute addresses these particular circumstances.
Allow me to state my question a little bit more clearly. Let's assume that on day one, all the medical providers submit their bills to the insurance company. And on day two, before those bills are paid out, the insured says, I want you to reserve all the PIP coverage for lost wages. So you now have a clear conflict, I guess, or maybe you do and maybe you don't. My question then is, would the insurance company have the right, whether under the statute or under the policy, to say, we're not going to reserve, we're going to pay the medical providers?
Yes, I believe it would under the language of the statute, the incurred language. If the earnings haven't been incurred yet, if they're
all right, so you're saying to the issue of who decides, you're saying is resolved by the statute?
Those facts are resolved by the statute.
And the key word is incurred.
Absolutely,
once it's
yes.
incurred, then the hospital can do whatever it pleases. Without regard to the wishes of the insured.
Well,
the insurance company, not the hospital, excuse me.
Yeah, when do whatever it pleases is a little strong, but the fact is that the insurance company would be following the statute, which requires the payment of expenses as they are as incurred.
So under your instruction, there can never be a reservation if the insurance company is in possession of medical expenses that equal to or exceed the PIP, regardless of what the insured wants.
Yeah, if I'm tracking the hypothetical, the answer to that is yes.
There would be no discretion.
I don't think the statute gives us discretion under those facts.
So the insurance company would have to take the position, I'm sorry, we'd like to help you, but we're bound by the statute to pay the medical providers.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes, if the insurance company is presented with medical bills that had been incurred and there's an assignment and there's no question about the assignment by the insured to the medical provider, yes, we'd have to pay those
and
bills.
And what if there's no assignment?
Then that's a different issue. I don't know if they're – then they may not be validly assigned. We'd have to – that'd require some investigation.
And I'd like to get back to my prior question, perhaps in a different fashion. If a person is in an accident and is injured and sent to the hospital, that person incurs, from my experience, substantial bills immediately, medical bills from the hospital and the doctors and the other health care providers. And assuming for the moment that the healthcare providers are very efficient, so they start sending out the bills to the insurance company the next day. It strikes me, just in terms of a practicality, that there would be no way that the injured party, the insured, would be able to submit incurred lost wages for at least a week, assuming they get paid by the week or 2 weeks or whatever. So they're always going to be, if you will, at a disadvantage under the plan that you describe as being required by the statute.
Under those facts, the lost earnings would be trailing the medical expenses under those facts. Of course, you...
Won't they always be trailing the medical expenses?
Likely they will be.
And so that means that to the extent that people's PIP coverage is not substantial, the situation such as this one is likely to arise pretty frequently.
It certainly arises in other situations. There are also often other coverages, and to the point of the $15,000, it was a legislative decision to set it at $15,000.
I'm not questioning that. Okay, thank you.
When there are other coverages that may cover medical expenses and the insured wants to maximize the lost wages benefit, if we rule in your favor, are we going to affect the Superior Court decisions that say that can happen, where maximization of the insurance benefit, so that if the insured has workers' comp, for instance, to cover the medical expenses and turns to you for wages, would you be able to still pay the medical expenses first?
Yes, whatever under those, where there are different coverages. I mean, the case law is pretty clear that, and the plaintiff certainly relies on it here, that the insurer has to work to maximize the coverage available under those circumstances where there are multiple coverages.
Well, will that no longer be the case if we rule in your favor here?
No. That would stand. What we're talking about here is a very specific right the Superior Court created and gave to insureds to direct how their benefits are paid. The case law that requires maximizing benefits with multiple coverages goes to how the insurer applies different coverages to maximize the benefits. It's a different line of authority.
But here, the war, I guess, if you use that colorful term, is between two separate coverages that are afforded by the same PIP carrier. On the one hand, lost coverage for lost wages, and then the other, coverage for medical expenses.
Not in this case, Your Honor. It's all. That's the confusion in the plaintiff's brief. And
well, assume that that were the case.
All right.
Apart from what happened here, doesn't the principle of maximization then require some judgment to be made by someone to allocate as between those two separate coverages, both of which are afforded by the PIP policy?
Your Honor, I mean, I guess I just come back to what the statute requires, and the statute makes benefits payable as they are incurred. And so if...
So doesn't that render the coverage for lost wages basically a shell? Worthless in many cases, if not most.
It could mean that there's no PIP benefits available for loss to pay lost wages. Yes, it certainly could mean that, and it would mean that here, and so there's no denying that. But again, I respectfully submit that if that's not how the legislature wants the law to operate, then the legislature needs to change the law, because again, if we go to the statute, section 2118, after in section 1A1, section 2A, where it defines PIP benefits, medical benefits, lost earnings, I think household care services are all part of the same coverage. And then if you go to 2118B, it talks about how these expenses, the expenses provided for in 2118A, are payable if incurred within 2 years. And if we go further down into 2118B, we have a provision, if we go back to 2118A3, we have a provision whereby the future medical and surgical expenses, surgical and dental expenses, can be reserved if it's apparent within the first 2 years after the accident, they'll have to be performed outside of those 2 years. And also, you can reserve for lost wages outside of those 2 years relating to those benefits. But the point of that is the legislature clearly knew how to create an exception, and they did not create the exception that the Superior Court has created in this case, which is why we ask that it be reversed.
Did you want to save the balance of your time?
I do. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. John Spadaro for the plaintiff, Melvin Davis. Your Honors, perhaps as a threshold matter, the best thing for me to do is to try to dispel any concern about an advisory opinion. It is, in fact, the case that before our side reached the point of requesting reservation of PIP benefits for lost wages, that State Farm had already exhausted the $15,000 by paying the hospital. But the uncontroverted testimony of the paralegal who worked for the personal injury lawyer who was representing Mr. Davis at the time is that on January 5, 2010, she had a phone conversation with a State Farm representative. They said, we're denying for permissive use. Now, under the Harris case, and I think this is common knowledge within the plaintiff's bar, a permissive use denial is a denial as to all coverage. If you deny it as to liability, it's not compartmentalized that way because you don't have any coverage for the accident, whether it's PIP or UM or liability coverage, if there's a valid permissive use defense. And no witness from State Farm has come forward and said, well, that account by Ms. Rank is incorrect. The following day, the attorney, the personal injury attorney who represented Mr. Davis, sent out the letter under the statute requesting a copy of the PIP application. While that letter was in the mail, State Farm sent the $15,000 check to the hospital and exhausted without going back and even though they knew that Mr. Davis was represented by counsel, without going back and contacting them and saying, we've reversed our denial, so now benefits are available. So it would have been reasonable for the underlying attorney, I think, to not even ask for a PIP application since he had a denial on his hands, and he could fight that. But obviously the PIP application was not going to free up any PIP payment because they had told him coverage was denied.
Well, if the insurer had notified your client or his attorney that it had changed his position and that there would be PIP coverage, how would that change your argument?
Well, I think it wouldn't change my argument at all, Your Honor. It simply would dispel the concern that I think was raised that there might be an advisory opinion.
Okay.
And that's what this is not a matter in which we're seeking an advisory opinion.
Your answer has assured me is this is an even more fact-specific case than I thought beforehand. Very unique.
Your Honor, I think it would be if the paralegal's deposition testimony had been controverted, but there's no one from State Farm who's testified we didn't raise a permissive user defense, and there's actually a reservation of rights letter that State Farm issued. There's no dispute about that, where they asserted the permissive user defense.
But it sounds to me like you're raising a bad faith argument that your client was told that there was coverage was being denied, and based upon that, arguably your client didn't rush to put in an application for PIP benefits for lost wages or an application to reserve PIP benefits for lost wages, then State Farm unilaterally decides, yes, we are going to cover, doesn't tell your client, doesn't tell the attorney, and proceeds to pay the medical bills. I don't even see where we get to the question about reservation of lost wages, because we're talking about what you're describing as improper conduct on the part of bad faith on the part of the insurance company.
Well, Your Honor, the one fact I would respectfully correct there, on January 5, 2010, the paralegals told no coverage for permissive user defense. The following day, the lawyer sends out the letter requesting the PIP application. So the underlying personal injury lawyer acted with considerable diligence despite being told that there was no coverage. But I'm not sure, I may not be following Your Honor's question entirely, but the issue of lost reservation of lost benefits is very much in play, because State Farm's response is, and they never, the statute requires that you give the applicant an application. State Farm never did that. They said, we're not even going to give you an application because we've already exhausted.
All right, wait, stop.
Yes, Your Honor.
I need to be clear on this. Maybe the rest of the court already is. But if your client did not ask for a reservation of PIP benefits for lost wages before all those PIP benefits had been paid out, then I'm not sure what it is we're supposed to be deciding. So can you tell me whether that sequence of events took place or it didn't?
There did come a time when a request was made to reserve.
I'm asking you whether a request to reserve PIP payments for lost wages was transmitted to the insurance company before the insurance company had exhausted the PIP benefits.
The answer to that is no. And the reason for that is, it goes back to a question Your Honor asked earlier. They beat Mr. Davis and his lawyer to the punch. And they beat him to the punch in part by telling them, you don't even have PIP coverage. We have a permissive user defense, and we're not going to, first the reservation rights said we're going to investigate that. Then the phone call said we're going to deny on that basis.
So now you're saying that State Farm was purposely deceiving its insured in order to be able to pay off the medical benefits first.
Well, I don't know at this stage in litigation whether it was purposeful, but it had that effect. It was misinformation. It was defense that we think had no valid basis, and they've never provided any evidentiary support for the permissive user defense. And it allowed them to win the race, so to speak, by exhausting all the benefits at a single blow with this check to the hospital.
Why does it make any difference to State Farm whether they pay the $15,000 to defray the medical cost that your client would incur, or pay the $15,000 to defer his lost wages?
A good question for State Farm, Your Honor, but the only...
No, it's a question for you.
Yeah, the only conceivable... I intend to answer it, Your Honor. The only conceivable reason I can see is it allows you, when you see a catastrophic loss like this, to close a file. And you're not spending time and resources on an ongoing file. Whereas when you have someone like Mr. Davis, who's paralyzed on his right side, and you're sending out checks... and sending out checks every 2 weeks for, it would have been, since he makes about $15,000 a year, it would have been for about a year. So you can close that file today, not have to have reserves set on that file anymore. So there are commercial advantages, both in terms of administrative costs and not having to reserve.
Okay.
That's
a reasonable answer. Does Mr. Davis not get an advantage from having his medical bills paid?
Having his medical bill paid is better than not having them paid. That's true. But having them paid in derogation of his lost wages is how he wound up getting evicted from his apartment, is how he wound up living in a homeless shelter. And of course, Mr. Davis is not a man of much means. But we could easily see it. We could have someone could be a realtor, or they could be a doctor, or they could be a lawyer, or a judge, for that matter. They could have...
Well, you're now descending income. You were going up, now you're going down.
They could have what's called a modest six-figure income then, Your Honor. Someone, perhaps a single mother with two children at home. She's got private health insurance. She doesn't have any source to replace her lost wages. If she's seriously injured, she breaks both legs and her pelvis, she may miss work for 6 months, 8 months, a year, and she's got... Now, she's someone who probably has more than the minimum PIP limits. She probably has $100,000 per person, $300,000 per accident. So she's got that $100,000 in lost wages that she should be able to tap into.
Well, why isn't this something for the legislature to fix? Because that's apparently what has happened in other states where the legislature has expressly addressed this, hasn't it?
In some states it has. Florida has done it by virtue of common law. Kentucky has done it by statute. And certainly it can be done either way. But if this court decides to hand that off to the legislature, we're going to see lost wage protection substantially gutted unless and until the legislature acts. So there's a practical reason, and that could be a year from now, it could be 10 years from now, it could be never.
Well, Mr. Spadaro, let me see if I understand your argument. And let's suppose the hospital bill was only $2,000. And it's paid. So we have this $13,000 of coverage. As I understand your position, your client could write to State Farm and say, I'm in the hospital, I've been here for a week, I've lost a week's wages, I'm submitting my lost wages, and I'm told that I'm going to be in the hospital for another 7 weeks. So it doesn't matter if you get any more bills for my medical care that's been incurred. I want you to know I want to reserve the balance of the $13,000 to pay my lost wages that I anticipate incurring. Is that your position, that you should be able to do that?
It is, Your Honor. It is.
Well,
and
so,
I'm sorry.
Just tell me how we deal with the word incurred. If the future 7 weeks wages have not been lost, they haven't been incurred, how do we deal with the word incurred in the statute?
Well, I may have misheard, Your Honor. We're not asking for prepayment.
I understand you're not asking for prepayment, but you're asking, we have a bill on the table for State Farm for the next $2,000 that has been incurred, and a letter from you saying, we anticipate incurring 7 more weeks of lost wages. Mm-hmm. Don't pay the second $2,000 that's already been incurred, because we don't want you to use up the balance of the $13,000 that we need for anticipated lost wages.
And the insurance company should honor that request, and so when the next pay period comes up, suppose it would have been $1,000, it's net lost earnings, so if the net was $1,000, it would be a $1,000 pay. See, it requires the insurance company to keep the file open.
I understand, but we also we have the word incurred in the statute, and we have a 30-day clock ticking. And so in my hypothetical, we get to the 30-day, there's a valid second $2,000 bill, and the insurance company's got this letter that says don't pay the balance because I may incur lost wages in the future, and an incurred word in the statute plus a statutory directive to pay within 30 days. How does your argument square with that?
Well, I think insurance companies would be the first ones to tell you, Your Honor, that the 30-day requirement doesn't mean you get paid. You have 30 days to either pay or deny in writing with a meaningful explanation. That's what Section 4118B requires. A meaningful explanation would be, we can't pay you because the strong public policy underlying the statute, as shown in the Johnson case, in the Cicchini case, in the Lane case, in the Steger case, and the Allen case, and hopefully this court's decision, requires us to reserve for lost wages because we've gotten such a request. And we have in the record letters within the 30 days from carriers saying just that without the citations.
All right, so the argument made by the other side is that the result that they're contending for is driven by the statutory word incurred. And this is following up on Justice Holland's questions. Your response is yes, but incurred is being misinterpreted. It's being conflated with payment, and all incurred actually means, that is, the only consequence of an incurred expense is that imposes a duty on the insurance company to respond within 30 days by either paying the bill or explaining why there cannot be payment.
Exactly so, Your Honor.
All right.
And so an obligation to pay incurred loss doesn't interfere and is not inconsistent with...
So your response to the statutory argument is that it basically unduly and unfairly narrows the meaning of the term incurred.
Yes, Your Honor. When the General Assembly, before there was a PIP statute...
Wait a minute. Before you move on.
Thank you.
The second argument that's being made is that your side's interpretation about the insured having the right to decide whether or not one element or a different element of PIP coverage will be reserved, in this case, lost wages.
Yes, sir.
Is not supported by the statute, and indeed the statute goes the other way because it creates some exceptions that do authorize reservation, all going to the point that if the legislature wanted to make an exception to cover this kind of case, it would have and it didn't. What's your response?
Well, my response is that there is no such reservation. That Section 2A.2.3 does not deal with reserving or holding in trust in any sense future benefits. It, all it says is we've got a two-year, the general rules, we've got a two-year window. You get medical treatment from 2 years of the accident. But if your doctor says, well, I know that Mr. Spadaro is going to need surgery here, but I can't do it now because first we've got to get his spleen in order. We will have to do it after a day after the two-year expiration period. The only thing that provision says is that the two-year window is enlarged if you can get a doctor to say, I've ascertained the need for care after those 2 years, and there's some reason why I can't give it to him now.
So your response is the legislature did not, in fact, make any exceptions that authorized reservation in other circumstances.
That's exactly right. And if you get to that day after the second-year period, even though the doctor has given you that opinion, if the PIP limits have been exhausted by any species of benefit, you're not going to get coverage because nothing's been reserved. That simply extends the two-year window.
Well,
yes, Your Honor.
That section does two other things, at least could conceivably be read to do two other things. One is an option to pay when that liability may be ascertained as opposed to when it's actually incurred. And secondly, it gives the insurer the option to pay early or pay when it's actually incurred, correct?
That's right, Ron. The insurer has the election to pay when ascertained.
And that's surgical and dental.
That's right. And in that sense, accelerate for care you know is going to fall beyond the two-year window, or to wait until the bill is incurred. The statute does give them
that. It doesn't give the insured the option to choose whether they can demand to be paid when it's ascertained or demand to be paid when it's incurred.
No, it doesn't. Not with respect to those medical benefits. But can that be read? I think you have to do some fairly convoluted intellectual leaps to read that as saying that the General Assembly has already decided through that section who's going to control the allocation. The General Assembly, I believe, has signaled who's going to control the allocation by creating the public policy behind PIP. And this Court has held, and the parties agree, that the fundamental purpose, and this goes to Your Honor's, Justice Jacobs' question about the source of law. This Court has held consistently, and the parties agree, that the fundamental and primary purpose of PIP is to protect and compensate injured persons. That's the fundamental purpose of the statute. And it goes to Justice Ridgely's question about why defer to the legislature. Historically, courts don't defer to legislatures when the purpose of the statute is clear enough to point you in the right direction, which is why this Court, there are cases saying, well, we're not going to allow this exclusion because it conflicts with the public policy behind PIP. Not because there's a section of the statute saying we don't allow this exclusion or that exclusion.
Sometimes we've learned over the years that the devil's in the details and that the rule that you've just quoted isn't the plaintiff always wins. That's not the public policy. The public policy, as I understand PIP, is to make sure the plaintiff is paid as soon as possible with a minimum amount of friction what the plaintiff has purchased in terms of PIP limit. But it isn't to rule in every case in a plaintiff's favor, which is what your interpretation seems to suggest. You cited five cases to us. Are any of those cases where the maximization principle, as it's been referred to by some here today, applied to a sole policy for PIP coverage with the distinction between when medical bills were incurred as opposed to when lost wages could be ascertained?
No, Your Honor. Those are cases that applied. Well, the Steger case involved a single policy. The Steger case involved a single policy and a carrier's effort to satisfy an arbitration award by using its own allocation under that sole policy.
And what is the holding of that case?
I would describe the holding as saying that the insurer, the PIP carrier, could not satisfy the outstanding arbitration judgment by allocating according to its own discretion. Judge Quillen said, I'm sympathetic to the right of the insured to determine the allocation and maximize for the maximal protection for the insured. I've learned by bitter experience that there is no rule that the plaintiff always wins. But somebody's got to control the allocation. And if it's State Farm, then we know people are going to be left destitute.
Why isn't it controlled simply by the insured submitting the claim directly? In other words, if it doesn't come from your client, it shouldn't be paid.
If what doesn't come from the client?
The request to pay this bill comes from your client as opposed to other claimants.
As Justice Berger pointed out, you have no right to accelerate payment on lost wages. So you've got, if you're paid biweekly, you have to wait 2 weeks and say, give me my net $1,000, and wait another 2 weeks and say, give me my net $1,000. Meanwhile, if there's catastrophic injury, you may have exhausted your $100,000 in PIP in a two-week hospital stay at the front end. So doing it that way means that people don't get anything close to maximal protection, that people are actually worse off than before the PIP statute was enacted. Before the PIP statute was enacted, you could sue the tortfeasor. You had to sue the tortfeasor for your lost wages. Now the lost wages that are covered by PIP, you cannot sue for. But at least you were the master of your complaint, and you could decide what recoveries to pursue and with how much energy to pursue different types of recoveries, pain and suffering, lost wages, medical expenses. I don't think that the purpose of the PIP statute, whose fundamental purpose is to protect, and we see all the cases about maximizing protection, should leave the insured in a lesser position than before.
Do you agree that the policy is silent on this issue as well?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think, Your Honor, the State Farm policy is silent. Right. That's right. And I've never seen, I can't speak to the policies for the other carriers who we've shown are routinely reserving benefits for lost wages, because I've never seen their policies. But I can tell you, Your Honor, I've never come across an auto policy whose PIP coverage addressed this who gets the control allocation issue. But Your Honor does raise an issue. I think there's a difference between latent ambiguity and patent ambiguity. And this, I think, is a fairly classic patent ambiguity. You can't point to ambiguous language because they don't address it. But they have to address it in a case like Mr. Davis's. The contract must be applied, and it then becomes ambiguous as applied because they didn't take the care to put any policy language that might secure that right. Now, if they did, we'd be arguing that it's against public policy. That'd be a different argument. But they didn't, so there's at a minimum, there's a patent ambiguity, and the Rome-Poulin case and other cases of this court require that in a consumer adhesion contract setting, that ambiguity be construed in favor of the policyholder or the insured. I don't know if Your Honors have any other questions. If Your Honors could just bear with me for a minute. I think I should probably address this assignment issue and why the assignment argument doesn't make sense. I'm in an auto accident. I go to see my primary care physician first in time. He says, you need surgery. I go to the orthopedic surgeon. The orthopedic surgeon operates and then says, you have to get physical therapy. So there's chronology there. PCP, orthopedic surgeon, physical therapy. Now, under the law of assignments, one side, if it's, as State Farm argues, an all-encompassing assignment of everything I have, and we say it's not. We say those kind of medical assignments don't affect lost wages. But if State Farm's right, under the law of assignments, once I assign my rights to the primary care physician, I'm divested of rights. And that would mean that the orthopedic surgeon has an empty assignment because I gave all my rights to all my PIP coverage to the first doctor I saw. And he'd be the only care provider. So, I mean, if you adopt their position, at least on the assignment issue, it means that the first physician who has an assignment in his hands has 100% right to all PIP benefits of any species arising at any time for time immemorial unless he decides to abandon that assignment. That makes no sense. So these assignments they're not easily pigeonholed within the law of assignments. They have to be reasonably construed as being assignments with respect to the PCP only for his bills, only for medical expenses that he furnishes me. And it doesn't deprive the orthopedic surgeon of the right to get his bills paid if there are limits left for him. If you define the assignment that way, in a sensible way, then none of these three actors has been assigned the right to collect my lost wages. I remain the master of my lost wages, and the purpose of the statute can only be fulfilled. I can only be protected. I can only make sure that I can pay my mortgage, pay my children's tuition, and avoid possibly being destitute, depending on how serious the injury is, by being given the right to allocate what bills get paid. And that is why Liberty, Nationwide, GEICO, and the other insurers, we've shown in the briefs, routinely allow for reservation of lost wages, and that's why the PIP statute's been in place for almost 40 years, and the issue's never come up before. One question I was hoping we might get answered today is when did State Farm start this first-in, first-out practice, or this you've got to get the doctor to revoke the assignment practice? I'm not sure which rationale is the true rationale for what they're doing, because they've gone back and forth between the two. But I would venture to say that State Farm has probably, up until a year or two ago, been honoring requests for reservations for lost wages. Otherwise, this issue would have been before
this point. You'd venture to say that based on what in the record?
Well, based on the fact that the rest of the industry is doing it, which is supported in the record by the half dozen.
Some in the industry, supported by some of your documentation at some point in time, in this case, suggests that.
Yes, we have a half dozen examples where the request was honored by other insurers. They've come forward with no example of any other Delaware insurer saying we're not going to do it that way, and the issue has not come up in 40 years. That's my basis. I think it's based more in logic and on what these other insurers are doing than anything else, Ron.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
If I could, I'd like briefly to address the assignment issue and then go on to the main issue that's presented before the court. On the assignment issue, it's important to understand how this came up. At summary judgment, in his summary judgment filings, the plaintiff never challenged the validity of the assignment. He said it was an assignment. He argued it was an assignment of medical benefits, and thus it did not assign his right to lost earnings. So he, again, conflated lost earnings and medical payments as being separate coverages. They're not. They're part of the same. It was only, and at the summary judgment argument, and we quote this is in the record at page A678, at the summary judgment argument, the plaintiff's counsel said, quote, "We haven't contested the legality of the assignment. It's beside the point because it's an assignment of, it's binding. It's an assignment of medical expenses, not an assignment of lost wages," unquote. I don't know why the Superior Court went out and decided this issue. It was not presented to it. We did not brief it. We haven't taken discovery on it. It should not be presented to this court currently. It has to be vacated. Now, on the issue of the reservation of lost wages, one point that is totally missing in plaintiff's argument is that the plaintiff is not the only claimant under the PIP statute. This court, in Sammons, in July of last year, held that health care providers are also claimants. They are entitled to rights under the PIP statute. And the purpose of the PIP statute is certainly a purpose of the PIP statute is to, you know, help protect insureds from financial ruin, but it's also to make sure that payments are processed in a timely fashion so that health care providers are not reluctant to provide medical care because they don't know if this assignment's any good. And the rule the plaintiff is arguing for here would totally eviscerate that. It would truly create chaos in the handling of PIP claims if on day one an insured can give an assignment of benefits to a health care provider, receive medical treatment, and then on day three, before that health care provider submits it, a claim, instruct the insurer, hey, do not pay that claim. I want to reserve this for lost wages.
Well, you say that would create chaos, but apparently other insurance companies are managing to handle things that way without going out of business.
Your Honor, on this record, we don't know what other insurance companies are doing. Again, after briefing, after the argument on summary judgment, all of a sudden these letters are introduced into the record by various plaintiffs' counsel. I don't know what these records are. I don't know what these letters are. They're certainly not admissible evidence. They certainly shouldn't be part of a basis for any decision this court should make. There's been no discovery of what these other insurance companies do. What I can tell you is that two insurance industry organizations filed a brief in support of State Farm. Now, I'm not saying everyone has to do FIFO. I am saying you have to do what the statute requires, and that is pay expenses as they are incurred. And to the point, again, about just, by the way, I want to point you to the plaintiff's brief where he was presented with in response to the question of, well, what is State Farm going to do if it's presented with a valid assignment of benefits, claims due, and it has to pay those what is it going to do if the plaintiff then says, well, I don't want you to pay those, reserve those benefits for me? Here's plaintiff's response. It's very telling. It's at page 16 of the plaintiff's brief. Quote, should this court affirm, then the moment an insured instructs her insurer to reserve PIP benefits for lost wages, the insurer will be vested with a valid legal basis to deny or defer, in timely fashion, of course, all claims for benefits that contravene the insured's instructions, unquote. Basically, what the plaintiff wants this court to do is to ignore every other right that any other claimant has under this statute in preference to the insured. And with all due respect, while the insured is certainly a claimant, he's not the only claimant, and it's not only his rights that are at issue here. And with that, I'll conclude.
Thank you very much, counsel. Thank you for an interesting argument. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.
Thank you.